listen to the Jason Greger Show presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca. As Tyler Yaremchuk from Oilers Nation and Daily Faceoff joins us now. And Ty, you seem to be like one who's nervous about the McDavid thing. Why?
I don't know if nervous is the right way to put it. I almost just kind of sit here and I don't know. There's been a few things that Connor McDavid has said that kind of just caused me to raise a little bit of an eyebrow. You know, he talked about this was maybe 2-3 weeks ago when he did one of his first press conferences. And he said, you know, if it's a distraction for guys, that's a them problem, not a me problem. And I kind of looked at that and went like, I don't know, you're the captain of the team. You're the best player on the team. It's your contract situation. Like, I get where he was coming from, but I was also kind of like, well, no, like the team being distracted is a problem for the captain of the team. And I even, you know, look at that interview yesterday with Friedman and Bukauskas, and there were just a couple of things that caused me to raise an eyebrow. It's just, it hasn't gone as smooth as I thought it would. Like, I thought he would be signed at the end of August, early September. So now I'm kind of taking every piece of information, not glass half empty, but just with a bit of a raised eyebrow, I guess.
Yeah, well, his response was, hey, if you can't handle the noise, then you're probably not in the right industry. Yeah. And I would agree with him, because if NHL players are following fans and some media people freaking out on social media, then they're probably you're just kind of wasting time. It's the old adage, you never take advice from somebody you never asked for criticism for. Or sorry, never take criticism from somebody you would never ask for advice from. And I look at McDavid, and everybody I talk to in the hockey world believes that Connor McDavid's going to re-sign in Edmonton because the team is good. Because the elsewhere is unknown, and there's very few teams that offer a Leon Draisaitl as a running mate, and very few guys win by themselves. You need a really good team, and the Oilers are close, right? If Edmonton hadn't been out of the second round, I think it might be a different conversation. But they've been in the Stanley Cup final, and I do, my understanding, like, Connor McDavid didn't have a great Stanley Cup final, and you know, I think he's aware of that. Like, not that he was the reason they lost by any stretch of imagination. There's lots of guys who could have played better, but that's sometimes why you lose in the Stanley Cup final, when you have lots of guys who don't play as well as they would have liked. And I think there's all those sorts of things. And I'm a big believer that unfinished business for lots of guys is a motivating factor, right? Like, if you're never close, you're like, well, there's really not any unfinished business compared to, damn, we could not get any closer than we have the last 2 years.
Yeah, I do think, you know, even look at the tone and the vibe of the team coming out of those two cup finals, right? Like, in the hours and days, we'll call it, after the first cup final loss, there was still like a lot of heartbreak there. After this last one, I think you saw stern faces, seriousness. I don't think it was as much disappointment as it was frustration from that group. So maybe that's a part of this as well. Maybe Connor wants to see what kind of shape the room is to start training camp too. Like, I know there's a bunch of things he could be considering, but I am still with you. As much as I've looked at a few things maybe more pessimistically than some other people have, at the end of the day, if I had to put money on it, I'm still betting on Connor McDavid signing some sort of an extension with the Oilers. Like, I would be stunned if it's not done, let's call it, halfway through the season here. So, yeah, I think it'll get done. I think it'll get done pretty quickly. It'll get done at some point. And, yeah, I don't think this is going to be something where at the trade deadline we're still like, ooh, what's going on?
Yeah, probably. I would agree with that. I don't think it would go that long, to be honest. And it was interesting, you know, his latest comment was like, well, when are you going to know? Well, it's just a feeling. And so that, to me, he's analyzed a lot of the stuff, and he's just using something that he has an abundance of right now, which is time.
Yeah, but even that comment there where he goes, it's just a feeling. That one I looked at and was like, oh, okay, but like, what is that feeling? Is it a feeling towards Edmonton? Is it a feeling about the team around you? Like, some of the comments, again, have just been ominous, I guess, is another word I can use. But whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, I think he's going to sign. And yeah, I like what you joked before going to break. Like, if you're going to sit here as an Oilers fan and be shaking and losing sleep every night, I just don't think that's necessary.
Yeah, like, I can get why Oilers fans, but I think you could, some people are more glass half full and some people are more glass half empty. And if you're naturally a glass half empty person, you're going to gravitate towards of, oh my God, he's going to, look what he just said. That means he's leaving. Whereas other people are like, oh, you know what? Yeah, he said this. Well, did you see what Leon Draisaitl said and, you know, everything else? So I get the theory that people like to say it's a distraction. I'm just not sure if it's really a distraction in the room where during the season, lots of players aren't even on social media. So, you know, like, I'm not going to be asking Zach Hyman every second day, what do you think of Connor McDavid's contract status? Because I wouldn't ask any other player that, because they have zero to do with his contract status. The only guy you could ask is Connor McDavid. Now, the Oilers play lots of road games, right? Guys in Edmonton aren't going to ask him because they've asked him lots. But every road city, and that's where they got a 5-game road trip early on. Then they got a 7-game road trip, and it's all out east. And there are a lot of eastern teams. We want McDavid. We want McDavid. He might be like, all right, I'm done talking about it by then. That I could see.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Like, his first, let's say it does stretch well into the season. What is that first media scrum in Toronto like at Madison Square Garden? Like, what are those like? What are road reporters going to be trying to pull out of him to throw at the top of their, you know, column or as their headline? Like, to me, that the road games are when it can become a distraction. Because I do agree with you. Like, in the room, like, is Vasily Podkolzin lying awake at night wondering if Connor McDavid's going to sign? No, he's worried about his own stuff. This is his career as well. He's worried about what he needs to do on a day-to-day basis. So, you're right. In the room, don't think it'll be that big of a deal. But those road trips, there will probably be some, I don't know, about interesting, maybe eye-rolling kind of quotes that are questions that'll come from some visiting media when McDavid's on the road.
Now, let's get to, McDavid is going to be on the ice tomorrow, for sure. Zach Hyman is not going to be on the ice with the team. He can skate on his own. But, so for opening day of training camp, and I'm just saying training camp, who are his two wingers tomorrow? What's your prediction?
I was reading a your article earlier this morning about Trent Frederick likes to be either center or on the right side. There's obviously a glaring hole on the right side. If I was in charge, maybe this isn't so much of a prediction, more of a projection of what I'd like to see. I want to see Trent Frederick get some runway in the top six. I know some Oilers fans were really disappointed, and understandably so, with what he did, you know. What, he played 7 regular season minutes and then he was in the playoffs, but he was so banged up the whole time. I know that leg injury or foot injury was really, really hampering him. I want to see what a fully healthy Trent Frederick can do. Like, this is a guy who scored 18 goals for the Boston Bruins, and his most common line mates that season were Morgan Geeky and James Van Riemsdyk, who was a shell of his former self. So I want to see Trent Frederick get a look with some skill. I would imagine Matt Savoy's getting a look up there early in camp, considering how well he played in those rookie games. And I think, you know, Savoy would be a pretty obvious answer, but Trent Frederick, I'm willing to put him in the sort of sleeper category, I guess, for a spot on the top liner in the top six.
All right. I think tomorrow I'm going to go with Matt Savoy with McDavid on the right. On the left side, I think it's going to be Adam Henrique.
I like that. I like moving Henrique to the wing a little bit. Again, the numbers for Nuge point towards him being a solid third line center. And, you know, I wrote a thing today about how last year at 5-on-5, without McDavid and Draisaitl in the regular season, the Oilers didn't score all that well. I think they got outscored 88-66 were the numbers on natural stat trick. Like, slotting Nuge down to the third line, maybe that just allows you to pair him with someone. And I even talked about how that someone could be a Savoy or a Howard. Maybe that's how you start to get some more offense when McDavid and Draisaitl are off the ice. You move Nuge down the middle and you pair him with one of these young guys. Like, hey, Nugent Hopkins can take care of his own defensively. You don't have any concerns with that. He can distribute the puck. He can play with different sort of skill sets. And Knobloch today spoke about how Savoy and Howard are guys who are used to playing with the best players on their team, and their line mates are usually, you know, the other best players on the team. But when you do that in the NHL, you need to go up against the other team's best defenseman, the other team's best defensive forwards at time. Maybe putting one of those guys down with Nugent Hopkins allows them to get some softer minutes. It's a little bit easier to kind of start their first full-time NHL season. And Nugent Hopkins is still a hell of a hockey player. It'd still give them skill to play with. So I'd be curious if one of those guys can fit well with Nuge.
Yeah, like, I think Nugent Hopkins, in all the conversations I've had with everybody around the team, I think they feel like, hey, third line center. And, you know, Knobloch mentioned, you know, a third line center, a little bit of a check and roll physicality, where I'm like, all right, so that's Nugent Hopkins. And I think we see Trent Frederick maybe with Nugent Hopkins when the regular season begins. And then, you know, I don't know about who's going to be on the left wing side. Because, you know, there's Mangiapane. I think Podkolzin is definitely going to probably get a look with Draisaitl to start. I think Leon Draisaitl really likes playing with him. And you know, he might not get a lot of points, but he does a lot of things that create space, as Leon described here about 10 days ago to me. So, you know, maybe that's where Henrique comes in. We'll see. But they're going to have lots of different looks, I think. We're going to, like, David Tomasik's another wild card. Like, you want to talk, he's probably the best pure right shot shooter they have amongst any forward. Now, that doesn't mean he's a top six player. But as a shooter goes, that guy can bomb the puck, like really rip it. And I'm kind of intrigued to see him. I think he's either going to be like your fourth line center, or he gets some looks in your top six as a winger, just to see which one's a better fit for him.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with him, too, is just that size, right? I think, you know, you can understandably be cautious putting expectations on a guy who's in his late 20s and hasn't played a game in the NHL before, but that size probably makes it a little bit easier to adapt to the NHL game when you can just use that frame to kind of shield guys off. And then, yeah, you mentioned the shot. I mean, hey, the net's the same size here as it is in Europe. If he can get to dangerous spots and he is a distributor like McDavid or Draisaitl, getting him the puck, like, the idea that he could finish off chances is not all that far-fetched. I remember talking to Steven Ellis when the Oilers signed him last spring, and Ellis is a guy who watched him and said, like, I think he can step into the NHL right now this season and be a guy who gets to at least double digits in goals. Steven said 12 to 15. So if he can score 12 to 15 just based on what Steven saw in Europe, again, you click with one of 97 or 29, and maybe that's a guy who can match what, I know he didn't do it with McDavid, but let's say you're trying to match Skinner's 16 goals that you lost in the lineup. Maybe Tomasek can get there.
Yeah, it's potential, right? It's going to come down to ice time for sure. We'll see about that. The one thing where I think there's really not going to be much discussion in training camp is defense. Ekholm's going to play with Bouchard. Wallman's going to play the right side with Nurse. They're going to stick him there a long time. Jake Wallman talked about it. You know, he really actually likes playing the right side on the penalty kill. He actually likes the right side in the offensive zone, especially. Can do the one-timer, but it feels like, you know, where you are is, as a left shot on the right side, you know, your stick's naturally in the middle of the ice more, so it can be a little bit better for you. And he's played there, so he's comfortable. So that leaves, you know, Kulak's your third pair lefty, and it's really going to come down to, I think, Emberson and Stetcher. There's a slight chance Alex Regula can maybe get in the mix, but he hasn't played hockey in a year, so I think that's going to be really hard to do. Goaltending, we know who the two goaltenders are. You know, the penalty kill is what kind of intrigues me, that I'm going to watch what they're doing, because Chris Knobloch outlined today that not only are they going to have a lot of different personnel, but they're going to have a different philosophy on their penalty kill from last year.
Yeah, and from a personnel perspective, I'm pretty intrigued to see kind of who ends up getting those minutes. Again, Henrique, a guy who can go out there, win faceoffs. Last year in the playoffs, obviously Connor Brown was the forward that spent the most time on the PK. He's gone, like, such an important piece in that penalty kill. But, you know, Janmark, Nuge, Henrique, there are plenty of candidates to go around. Even a guy like Kasperi Kapanen, I'm intrigued to see what kind of role he ends up playing here. Like, I don't think he'll exactly be a top six guy out of the gates, even though he spent some time on Drysdale's wing last season. But, like, if he's going to crack this roster as an everyday player who's playing as a bottom six winger, he probably needs to show this coaching staff that he can have a role on the penalty kill. He killed just under a minute per game when he did play in the playoffs, but probably need that to be up. Like, if he could be a regular penalty killer that Knobloch trusts, like, it's a lot easier for him to have an everyday spot in this lineup.
Tyler Ramczyk, Oilers Nation, joins us, Oilers Nation, every day. What do you make of Ike Howard? And what do you think he's going to need to do to because he's obviously got to play in the top nine if he's going to stay here. There's no reason to have him there. Do you think he plays more than, you know, the first 10 games, or do you think we see him start in the minors and then come up?
I just think, you know, expectations maybe need to be in check a little bit more with him. And listen, I want to cut him some slack in the rookie games, comparing him to Savoy, because I know that's what a lot of people kind of jump to quickly. Savoy had been skating for a little bit. He'd been on the ice. Howard was out doing the NHLPA thing. Like, the idea that Howard wasn't as ready to jump into those rookie games and dominate as Savoy, like, that maybe should have been a little bit expected, but I also do think it showed that Savoy's the more polished prospect. Savoy has a year of playing against men. He had that cup of coffee, in the NHL last year. And as much as Howard's played against 21 and 22-year-olds in college, he hasn't had to go up against the best players in the world before. So, again, I think ultimately at this point, like, if you set the over-under at 41 games this season, I probably take the over. But in terms of him starting with this team, or maybe having to go down to Bakersfield for a month and a half to start the year, I don't think that's totally out of the question, and I don't think fans should be disappointed if it happens. Like, while it's totally possible he clicks really well with one of 29 or 97 and he's just flying out of the gates, I just think a guy like that coming out of college with no pro experience, never even did the little 9-game trial at the end of his last college season or whatever, that guy might just need to get a bunch of puck touches play 22 minutes a night in Bakersfield and play on the power play and learn these different things, and then come up late November, early December, maybe even January 1st, and then he'll be ready. Like, again, people who are jumping and betting on him to win the Calder, that's just a stretch for me.
Oh, goodness. Like, and the other thing I find interesting is, so Matt Savoy was a number 9 overall draft pick and had a dominant final year of junior. He got acquired, comes in for Ryan McLeod, who was, by the way, a proven NHL player on a team that went to the Stanley Cup final. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, Savoy can go to the minors. No big deal. A year later, Ike Howard comes in, who had one really great year in college, gets traded for another prospect. Both of these guys are late first-round picks. And the same people are like, oh, my God, Ike Howard, he's a guarantee scoring 30 goals. There's no way he can't be here. And I'm kind of like, what the hell's going on? Am I living in Bizarro World? Like, you got a 9th overall pick, a guy who was, you know, played in, you know, an 72-game season, 68-game season. And no chance he's ready. But Ike Howard a year later is like lock, stone cold lock. And I'm kind of like, I don't get it.
I think part of it, too, and I remember when they acquired Savoy, it was, you know, a day or two, maybe a week after you had Colin Chalk on your show, and he was, like, right out of the gates, he said, and the organizational messaging was, like, he's going to Bakersfield. Like, they really didn't give him much of a chance, and they didn't allow any fanfare to build. It was, like, he's going down to Bakersfield, we're developing him. With Howard, we haven't really gotten that messaging yet. Like, the Oilers haven't been afraid to put out some sizzle reels on Twitter that get people fired up, and they do a lot of Iceman, Ike Howard stuff. And I don't know, they've allowed the hype to grow a little bit, whereas, you know, maybe it would have been better for the player if they just kind of came out and said, like, whoa, he is going to need some time in Bakersfield to start. But again, you want to give the player a chance to prove himself in training camp. But it's just interesting. You're right. The messaging with Savoy right out of the gates was, we're taking our time. Don't expect him on the team out of camp. Versus with Howard, they've kind of let fans' imaginations run wild a little bit here.
Yeah, a bit. And so I don't know if it's because Howard was a guy who kind of had agreed to the trade, yada, yada, yada. So you say all the right things, but, and it was later in the summer. It wasn't right afterwards. So maybe there's that. And there was still like all the fanfare from losing the cup. And so maybe the Savoy trade just kind of got lost in it. Who knows? But it hasn't been lost in me, the difference of approach from some people from Savoy to Howard, where I'm not sold like Howard's a better prospect coming out of college than Matt Savoy was coming out of junior.
Oh, I'm not at all. And like, again, you can point to the accolades and the Hobie Baker season and all of that. But I mean, go back, and I'm sure you have, the last 15 Hobie Baker winners, the guys who win it at his age, a lot of them don't actually end up panning out to very much, or at least panning out to a star level or 25 plus goal level. Like, they become everyday NHLers and kind of nothing more. So again, I just think people should, especially early in the season, pump the brakes on Ike Howard. And if he has to go down to Bakersfield for a month or 2 months, I don't think people should be going, what a failure by Bowman or this or that. Like, that's the normal trajectory for a prospect like him, who was a late first round pick. Like, he might just need a little bit of time. And the other thing too, like, as much as playing next to McDavid and Draisaitl means you get a lot of opportunities, as I said earlier, it also means you go up against the other team's best players. And it can also be, I remember talking to Tyler Ennis about this, and he was like, man, my first 2 weeks with the Oilers trying to learn how to play with Connor and Leon, like, at first you just want to defer to them and you're not sure, you don't want to mess up. Like, he can put a lot of pressure on you too. So again, tempering expectations with Howard, I think it's a little necessary right now.
Ty, always good to catch up with you, buddy. Have a great day. We will chat with you next Wednesday.
Sounds good. See you.